You're listening to Naked Oceans with Helen Scales and Sarah Castor Perry. In a moment, we'll be hearing from ocean explorer supremo Sylvia Earle with her thoughts on the census, and we'll find out which marine expert we tracked down to choose our critter of the month. Now, as well as documenting life in the oceans today, the Census of Marine Life also looked into the past. We chatted with Paul Holm from Trinity College Dublin to find out more about how researchers have been winding back the clock to work out what the oceans used to be like and how this can help us look to the future.
10 years ago, my colleagues said to me, writing the history of the oceans, you can't do that because there's no sources. Historians don't do fish. What we now know is that actually we've got plenty of evidence for how much we've taken out of the oceans, what kind of footprint that has left. We also know a bit about how that impacted the development of human society. So it's learning more about our relationships with the oceans. And I think that's exciting because very little work has been done in that field.
And you're looking into the past. How do you do that? And how far into the past are we now able to look when it comes to the oceans and fisheries and so on?
Well, you need to look into all sorts of sources. It can be, well, obviously written records. As a historian, I would go to port books. I would go to skipper's log books. I would go to monastic records. You can go to archaeological evidence. You can look at the trash heaps, as the Americans would say, or the kitchen middens. Look at old fish bones. You can look at sediment layers in the ocean bed. And some of the most imaginative uses of records was the use of restaurant menus. The New York City Library had one possibly slightly insane collector who had been collected restaurant menus and had built up this fantastic series of 100 years of restaurant menus, which provides a fantastic record of what people used to eat and how we've been eating down the food web. 100 years ago, abalone would be on the menu, whereas today that would be an endangered species. One of the exciting things about this is that actually when you use that kind of evidence, you also use evidence that people will be able to relate to very easily. When I talk to fishing communities, very often they will flatly deny that they had any footprint in the oceans. They will say, well, the fishes are doing all right. But if I tell them, actually, if I look into your grandparents' logbooks, they were catching fish which would be three times as long as the cod that you're landing today, that seems to be an indication of some change, and they will actually have to say, yeah, that's pretty bad news.
So it sounds like during the census, you unleashed this new wave of ways of looking into the past. You say people thought, well, how can you do that? And now all these different creative and imaginative approaches. And that's really quite new, isn't it? That you've now kind of unleashed this whole new, almost a whole new field of research, really.
Yeah. And the exciting thing is that because so few people have been looking at this in the past, there's lots to discover. I think one of the most amazing things is the discovery by James Barrett and his group in Cambridge of the so-called fish horizon. We now know that around 1050, 1100, fishermen all around the North Sea in England, Scotland, Holland, Belgium, Denmark were going much further out into the open sea and catching fish at depths of 200-300 meters, bringing back gadoids of all sorts, so cod, ling, that sort of species, and marketing the fish fairly deep inland. That's new. It really reveals that there was a tremendous change in the diet of ordinary people. It explains a lot about the impact that we humans have had on the open ocean, because everywhere we look, the first thing you do is take out the big fish, the big marine mammals or the big fish. And of course, when we look at the cod bone of way back then, these were humongous creatures that they were landing, because obviously nobody had been catching them before, so they lived to be the full natural age of up to 20 years. They could grow well in excess of 1.5 meters.
Presumably, we use this looking into the past to think about the present and even the future. How does your research help us think about things like conservation and what we really need to be doing to the oceans now. It's all very well to say in the 12th century we changed our diets. Yeah. How does that now help us look into the future?
It's kind of sad to know that we took out all of that, but actually it's also something that we can turn to really inform us for future ocean policy, because if it used to be out there, it could actually be rebuilt, because the oceans are very resilient. Although we have wiped out many of the commercial fish stocks, it's not that the fish have gone in a biological sense. They're still out there. They're waiting for their chance. The oceans are deep and there are many places to hide. So there is a huge potential for us to rebuild fish stocks in the future. Remember, all the fisheries biology science really rests on knowledge that's been accumulated in the last 50 years, whereas what we're looking at is how did the oceans look 100, 200, 300 years ago. They were very different. They could be rebuilt to that stage if we want to. Of course, that's a political question. Will we want to do it? But the economic gains would be sizable. It would mean that there would be plenty more fish, and it would be fish of a much more valuable nature. Because, of course, if you have fish that is allowed to grow to longer scales, you actually have much more attractive fisheries. And you will also have much more resilient fisheries, because it makes no sense now that we are killing off cod at the age of less than 3 years of age. That's just before they spawn for the first time. It would make more sense to wait at least till they're 8 or 10 years, have spawned a few times, and actually we know that the eggs of cod that has spawned a few times is actually much more likely to survive from all the hazards that confront a little fish egg. So lots of gains to be made, and we can learn that from history, that the oceans will actually provide that future for us if we want to. It's not doom and gloom. It's actually tremendous potential.
That was Paul Holm telling us about how kitchen scraps and skippers' logbooks are building a detailed picture of oceans past and how they can help direct us into the future. I think one of the really exciting things that emerged in the census is all the new ways of looking at the oceans. I mean, the research has been so imaginative and pushing out those boundaries, showing that we can learn so much by thinking creatively and how we observe and measure life in the oceans and the way that humans have impacted them as well.